Hechel Menachem presents A Tale of Two Souls, an ongoing lecture series on the Tanya by Rabbi Yosef Yitzchak Jacobson. This is tape number 54 in the series entitled Living with the Real You, recorded live at Hechel Menachem in Brooklyn, New York on the 1st of Tavis, 5759.
We are in the middle of Perek Yutes of the Tanya. In the 19th chapter, the Alter Rebbe concludes the discussion he began at the beginning of the 18th chapter, Perek Yutes. In the beginning of Perek Yutes, the Alter Rebbe began to explore what he defines as the Ahava Mesoteris, the concealed, embedded love within the essence of every single Jew. And said that four elements have to be explained concerning this love. Number one, the Alter Rebbe said we must understand the shoyrish of the Av, the root, the origin of this love within the soul. Which faculty, which facet of the soul produces this love? The second thing we have to understand is the theme of this love, inyana. The theme, the trend, the notion, the aspiration. What is this love all about? Because love is a very charged word. It's a very loaded word. But it must be analyzed. What are you looking for? When I say I love you, what do I really mean? When somebody feels love towards somebody or towards something, what are they really searching for? This is a fascinating idea because, you know, sometimes love is love. And we want to just assume that the love is pure and altruistic and profound and genuine and wondrous and magical. But when you get down to it, love is a complicated reality. And we have to understand in every love, what is its real theme? What is the person in love truly searching for? That's the second thing we have to understand about this love. The third thing the Alter Rebbe said we have to understand about this love is Eichi Yerushalanu. How can love be inherited through generations? How can a particular love towards God be inherited through generations? Ideas, values, perspectives change from fathers to children, from mothers to children, certainly after hundreds of generations. And yet here, we say that the love is transmitted generationally. How does that happen? If my father loves somebody, Does that mean that I love the person automatically? And even if there is usually a connection, because if your parents have a particular affection towards a person or towards something, so naturally those values or perspectives will be transferred from generation to generation. But can one say that after decades and centuries and millennia, the love towards that particular entity should still exist? It just goes from generation to generation. And yet about this love we say that it comes with a territory. If you're Jewish, it comes with a territory. How does that work? And his fourth question was, Eich nichlal bagam dechilu? For a relationship to be optimal, it always must have two components. Ava and Yira. Love and awe. Affection and respect. The sense of closeness and the sense of space. The fact that I want to be close with you, I want to even become one with you, and also the sense that there is a distinction between you and I. And I have a particular awe and respect for that space. We see this in human relationships in a very powerful and blatant way. Sometimes in a relationship you'll see a lot of ahava, a lot of love, but what's lacking is yira. There's no respect. There's no awe. There's no real space you create for the other person. And what that does is, ultimately, it undermines the relationship, because where there has to be a space and a distance, if you eliminate the space and the distance, it's not good for the relationship. In our relationship with Hashem, with our Creator, there's also two components. Discussed numerous places in Tanya, we discussed it already earlier in chapter 4 and other places. There's the element of Ava, but there also must be the element of Yira. There's the love I have to God, but there's also the respect, the distance, the awe, the humility. There's an expression in Chassidus, Ava is Geschmacke, aber Yira is Gesinte. Ava, love, is more Geschmack, it's more delightful, it's more interesting and engaging and inspiring. But Yira, awe, fear, is healthier. It creates the stability, it creates the consistency, it creates the borders, the boundaries. Because in the name of love, people can forgive themselves for wrongdoings, for mistakes, for transgressions, for errors. Love will just cover it up. In the name of love, I can step out of line. I can get drunk. I can get intoxicated. So Yira is the healthy balance which allows me not to become completely consumed with my feelings of love and really maintain the space I am supposed to maintain. So when the Alter Rebbe is now exploring, beginning from chapter 18, a new dimension in the experience of Judaism, not the emotions that are born from meditation and reflection and cognition, but rather tapping into a pre-existing love inherent in the Jew as fuel and as a springboard for the whole experience of a Jew, what it means to live as a Jew in Torah and in mitzvahs on a day-to-day basis, to dismiss and divorce that from Yira would mean that there's something fundamentally lacking here. It's not a complete system. So how, the Alter Rebbe asks, does this love encompass Yira as well? Or as well? And this, he began discussing and answering in the two chapters, Yudches and Yutes. The first thing he explained was, how can this love be inherited? And the answer is that this love is not just a particular emotion towards a particular thing which your grandfather or grandmother may have had, but you don't have. Just just because somebody's grandfather was a communist or a socialist, it does not mean automatically his grandchildren, great-grandchildren, certainly not great-great-great-grandchildren, will all follow the same perspective. Why? They have their own minds and their own hearts, and they have to develop their own ideas. How does this Ava, how does this get inherited from generation to generation? So for this, Dr. Rebbe explained, it's not that our forefathers inherited and bequeathed a certain emotion, a certain feeling towards God, because as we said, that will not necessarily be transmitted from generations, certainly not for many generations. Rather, as Dr. Rebbe explained in Perek Yitches, what our forefathers have given us is a particular type of soul, a particular type of neshama, a particular type of consciousness. And that comes with the territory. The love embedded and concealed to Hashem is part of the dynamics of that soul, of that consciousness. And souls get inherited from generation to generation. Souls pass on from generation to generation. Just as the human soul will not be compromised even after hundreds of generations. If somebody's a human being, his or her children will be human, their children will be human, their children will be human. The same is true with animals. The same is true on all levels of souls. Souls go from generation to generation. Our patriarchs, the Avos, have given every Jew who ever lived a certain type of neshama, the Jewish soul. Every person has a soul. Every person has a soul. As Dr. Rebbe will explain in Shara Yichud Ve'emuna, in the first chapter, everything has a soul. Every existence has a soul. Certainly every human being has a soul. And Chaviv Adam Shenivri B'Tzelem, the Mishnah says, every human being was created in Hashem's image, in God's image. But then there is something different, distinct. There's a Jewish soul. Everyone has a soul, everything has a soul, but it's not the same type of soul. It's not the same type of consciousness, not the same type of sensibility, not the same type of sensitivities. This is the soul that the patriarchs, the matriarchs have bequeathed to their children and grandchildren for all of the generations, the Jewish soul. And as a component of this soul, there is this Ava. The Alter Rebbe then went on to explain the source, the origin of this love. It comes from Chachma Sheben Nefesh, the faculty of Chachma in the soul. Where the other types of love discussed earlier come from Bina, this soul comes from Chachma. What is Chachma? Chachma is this space, this place of selflessness, of the suspension of ego within the soul, where Eir Ein Sof, where the divine reality dwells and is manifested. And it's from that spacelessness within the soul which this love is born from. In chapter 19, he went to discuss Inyana. What is the theme of this love? What is the notion of this love? What is the Jew looking for in this love? And he compared it to the flame, always licking the ear, always dancing, always swaying continuously, pining to depart from the wick and become submerged in its source in heaven. A flame is never content, it never calms down. There's always a tension, a lack of complacency, striving upward. This then is also the love within every Jewish soul, often concealed but present. It's a love where the soul is seeking to leave the body and become one with God. Become completely submerged and nullified in the all-pervading reality of Hashem. This is not something, again, that comes from a logical conclusion or a cognitive experience or a particular idea. It is rooted into the very DNA, so to speak, of the soul. Within the soul, there is this nature of transcendence, a yearning to depart from the body and to cleave to its source in the life of lives. Although the soul knows there it will be completely nullified, it won't have its own autonomous identity. So logically you may ask the soul, why are you searching for this? The soul doesn't have a logical answer. This is something beyond a logical equation in the soul. It's part of its very essence, it's part of its very nature, it's who it is. It's a chelik alekam imal, it's part of God, it wants to be part of God. It wants to be completely submerged in God. Now this is a revolutionary idea. It's critical to understand because really what this means is that there's a part in you every moment which is seeking to go beyond the world, which is seeking to go beyond physical life. And if we don't understand this, we don't appreciate this, it's impossible to even begin to understand the dynamics which go on in our own hearts and our own souls. You know, we see a fascinating thing. I mean, we touched on this last week and at other occasions. We see a fascinating thing that sometimes people are just looking for a little serenity, a little happiness, a little tranquility, and they finally get there. They finally have their dreams, their materialistic dreams come true. They have their house and they have their summer house, and it's Sunday afternoon and they're making a barbecue and they're sitting on their porch and they're enjoying the weather is perfect and the ambiance is perfect and the food is delicious and they're comfortable and everything should be perfect and they should feel a sense of, no, I'm really happy. And yet we know that often that feeling just doesn't come. There is something still missing. There is something that's still lacking. That's bothering us. It's perturbing us. And they themselves wonder, what is it? What else do I have to do? What other toys do I have to acquire? What other comforts do I have to be able to experience in order to finally feel happy? So they invest yet more money and more time and more energy to acquire those toys as well, which do give them momentary delight and even ecstasy and fun and so forth. But the emotion of emptiness still plays a role in our lives. If you don't understand that the tension of life does not come from the fact that you're living here or you're living there, you have this or you don't have this, you have this challenge or that challenge, this problem, this dilemma, this obsession, this difficulty. Of course, all of these can add to the lack of serenity in a person's life, but the real tension in life comes from the very paradox of living, the very paradox of existence. Is what introduces the most important and powerful tension in life, and that is the marriage between the soul and the body. The fact that the soul is living, coexisting with your body, in competing over the same space, and married together in one home, so to speak, this is a paradox which creates tremendous tension. Because the soul, as the Alter Rebbe says, is a flame. It's never content. It's looking for something else. It's looking for God. It wants to be one with God. That's what it's looking for. That's what it's searching for. And you can't feed it in any other way. It can't be nurtured in any other way. It will never be satisfied through anything else. It yearns for transcendence. It needs transcendence. That's who it is. You cannot ask the soul to betray its very identity, its very core, its very properties of existence. It will never become what it's not. The body often has a different agenda. And these two agendas clash on the deepest level. So our very existence is filled with tension. There's a tremendous paradox there. And if I don't acknowledge that, I can't even begin to develop happiness. Because I'm barking up the wrong tree, I'm going to look for things to satisfy me that will not satisfy me because they're not addressing the real tension that the neshama needs something else. The soul is yearning for something. The soul is searching for something. The soul is a chelek l'kayim al, it's a piece of the divine. It wants to be submerged and nullified within the divine. And it's this pain, it's this anxiety we have to address in our life. So this is inyana, this is the theme of the love. The theme of this love is the aspiration to be completely submerged in the beloved. Yet, this love is often concealed. Because the chachma of the soul is often concealed. It could be asleep. And when it's asleep, it's ineffective. It retreats into its own cocoon, into its own corner, and it's simply ineffective. Furthermore, all the aspects of the divine soul, the Alter Rebbe said, can even be in exile. In exile by the enemy. Used and manipulated for objectives and experiences which are totally contrary to its nature. And yet, the Rebbe said, there comes a point in life where the soul can't sleep any longer. The soul awakes. And that's when the Jew is confronted with a question of emunah, with a question of faith. As Dr. Rebbe explained, throughout history, we've seen that sometimes even the greatest sinners and transgressors, Poishe Yisrael, their whole life they were careless, apathetic about Yiddishkeit. And yet there came a moment where they were given the choice of betraying their Judaism, betraying their Jewish identity, betraying their God. That was one thing they can do. And if they refused to do that, they would be put to death. And in the majority of cases, the Jews chose the latter. Not the mystics, the great Kabbalists, the great righteous tzaddikim, the great scholars, the great rabbis. Even very simple Jews. And sometimes Jews who had no Jewish education and displayed no particular Jewish sensitivity. It demonstrated that there was a core within them that was never exposed, but was always there. What is this core? What is this pintaliyit? It's chachma shebenefesh. It's this avim esoteris. The fact that within the Jewish soul, within chachma, the reality of Hashem, the presence of Hashem, the existence of Hashem is manifested. It's conspicuous. It's present. At the core of the Jewish soul, there is an intimate oneness with divinity, with God. And that's who the Jew is. That's what the soul is at its core level, and from there comes the love to be one with God. Completely one, completely submerged in the reality of God. This chachma, this intimacy with God produces a love. It's a love towards your own deepest core. It's a love which represents the core of the Jewish soul, which is one with God, and therefore craves to be completely one, completely submerged and nullified in the reality of Hashem. And when this switch is opened, when this component of the soul is exposed, when the Jew becomes cognizant of it, it's as though he can't even choose anything else. Or she cannot choose anything else. Because this is who I am. I cannot choose to be not me, even for a few moments. If you ask me to say, you know, I'll give you $1 billion, but for the next 5 minutes, I don't want you to be you. I'd say, I'd love to do it. It would be nice not to be yourself for a few minutes. Not to live in your own mind for a few minutes. But I don't know how to. How can I not be me? What do you want me to do? I am I. It's just who I am. You want me to be quiet? I can be quiet. You want me to think about other things? I can think about other things. I can change my garments. But there's certain things I can't change. This is me. This is not a choice. Ayid is getlich. A Jew at his or her core is godly. There's a oneness with Hashem in that, on that level. That's who the Jew is. That's his life, that's his real existence. Yet, this dimension of self can be completely concealed. And we see this practically in most people's, in many people's lives, even in more simple and mundane expressions. Ask a person, what is the most important thing for you in your life? Or what are the three most important things in your life? Certainly, people will give different answers. But whatever their answer is, then ask them, and how much time a day do you spend pursuing these things? And you'll sometimes be surprised by the discrepancy. Let's take a simple example like health. Health is certainly way up there for most people, for many people. Proof is, people will make tremendous sacrifices for health. They will endure lots of pain, surgery, therapies, and all types of medical painful experiences in order to be able to be healthy. They want to live, and they want to be healthy. And yet you'll see that on a day-to-day basis, the same people often do things which undermine their health or compromise their health or certainly don't assist their health. How does that happen? The answer is we're not in touch often with what matters most to us. If somebody were to ask a question, if you knew you had 2 hours to live, theoretically speaking, if it was possible, you're approached and you said, somebody says, you have 2 hours to live. I want to know, what would you do during these 2 hours? How would you spend these 2 hours? What would you be doing? The last 2 hours of your life. What would you be doing? Would you run to the office to make another couple of dollars? Would you go out to eat? Would you go have a drink? Would you go have a cigarette? Would you go running to the bank? Would you go running to the bank to take out some money? Will you go buy a new car? Will you go surf the web? You'll start looking for things on the websites. Will you go read a newspaper? Will you go drink a beer? What would you do? Ask yourself the question. Not, God forbid, anybody should be confronted with that question. But to be able to answer that question means to be able to crystallize to ourselves what is really important to us. And I think most of you know that everything I said will not make it into these last 2 hours. You will usually spend these 2 hours connecting with that and those you love and cherish most. Now look, in every day, how much time do you spend on these things that you would do during the last 2 hours? And how much time do you spend on other things which you would never even entertain to do during your last 2 hours? And sometimes the discrepancy is quite dramatic. How does that happen? The answer is, our deepest priorities, what touches us most, is often deeply concealed in the subcellars of our psyche. And it takes a momentous event to bring it out, to expose it, to allow it to emerge and come to the fore. But once it comes to the fore, it's not even a question. It's not like, let me sit down, maybe I want to do this, maybe I want to do that. It's not a question. Once you feel your inner workings, it's not a question. This is in and this is out. What's the question? You're not making a choice. It's not up for discussion. It's non-negotiable. Should he spend time with his children? Or should he go out to a restaurant or run to the bank or run to the office and take another call and get another order? And this is not just a theoretical question. Le'aleinu v'le'aleichem at a funeral, if you listen to eulogies for people who passed on, listen to what people say during those eulogies. I never heard somebody say, you know, he was an unbelievable guy, he spent 19 hours a day in his office and didn't have even a few minutes for his kids a week. What a great guy. I never heard that being said at a eulogy. Because at those moments, people who are at a funeral, le'aleinu v'le'aleichem v'ken yidin gedach v'ken metshin gedach, in such a moment, people are forced to focus on a deeper layer of self. And when they do focus on it, the priorities are far more obvious. Comes the Alter Rebbe and says, on a deeper level yet, this is true about every Jewish life. There is your core self. There is Chachma Shabanefesh Shabashay Raidin Saibarch. And once that's exposed, all of the cravings and addictions and habits and instincts and taivas and sins, taivas isr, taivas heter, cravings which were forbidden, cravings which are even permissible, the person just naturally casts away, as he said, they melt away like wax. And he chooses God.